Hello, everyone. You are listening to Have I Got a Story for You, with top stories at the bottom of the hour, with your host, DJ Denouement, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. And have I got a story for you today? Today, I will be talking about the 2019 British war film, 1917. On this show, we will be discussing the overall plot summary, production background, character arcs, production techniques, and what aspiring storytellers can learn from 1917. So for those of you who have still not seen 1917, I implore you to stop listening now and go and watch the film for yourself before listening to today's episode of Have I Got a Story for You. Because 1917 is something what I have come to realize to be my favorite movie of all time, as of this moment, until maybe the next Avengers movie comes out or something. But anyways, 1917 is a British war film that was directed and produced by Sam Mendes, who also directed and wrote Skyfall and Spectre, the last two James Bond entries within the overall James Bond 007 franchise. 1917 was written by Mendes and Christy Wilson-Cairns, and the film stars George MacKay, Dean Charles Chapman, Mark Strong, Andrew Scott, Richard Madden, Claire de Burgh, Colin Firth, and Benedict Cumberbatch. It is partially inspired by stories that were told to Mendes by his paternal grandfather, Alfred Mendes, about his time serving in World War I. The film itself takes place very soon after the German retreat to the Hindenburg Line during Operation Alberic. The film follows two young British soldiers who are ordered to deliver a message calling off a doomed offensive attack. This message is especially important to one of the soldiers because his brother will be part of the attack. Now, for this segment, I'd like to talk about the overall plot summary of 1917, but first I'd like to go a little bit more into detail about some background on World War I and exactly what separates it from the rest of the, well, more famous wars like World War II and the Vietnam War and so on. But World War I was a global war originating in Europe that lasted from July 20th, 1914 to November 11th, 1918. Contemporaneously known as the Great War or the War to End All Wars, it led to the mobilization of more than 70 million military personnel, including 60 million Europeans, making it one of the largest wars in history. It is also one of the deadliest conflicts in history, with an estimated 9 million combatant deaths and 13 million civilian deaths as a direct result of the war. While resulting genocides and the related 1918 Spanish flu pandemic caused another 17 to 100 million deaths worldwide, including an estimated 2.64 million Spanish flu deaths in Europe, and as many as 675,000 Spanish flu deaths in the United States. On June 28, 1914, Gavrilo Princip, a Bosnian Serb Yugoslav nationalist, assassinated the Austro-Hungarian heir, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, in Sarajevo, leading to the July Crisis. In response, Austria-Hungary issued an ultimatum to Serbia on July 23rd. Serbia's reply failed to satisfy the Austrians, and the two moved to a war footing. It was then that a network of interlocking alliances enlarged the crisis from a bilateral issue in the Balkans to one involving most of Europe. By July 1914, the great powers of Europe were divided into two coalitions, the Triple Entente, consisting of France, Russia, and Britain, and the Triple Alliance of Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Italy. The Triple Alliance was only defensive in nature, allowing Italy to stay out of the war until April 1915, when it joined the Allied powers after its relations with Austria-Hungary deteriorated. Russia felt it necessary to back Serbia and approved partial mobilization after Austria-Hungary shelled the Serbian capital of Belgrade on July 28th. Full Russian mobilization was announced on the evening of July 30th, the following day, and Austria-Hungary and Germany did the same while Germany demanded Russia demobilize within 12 hours. When Russia failed to comply, Germany declared war on Russia on August 1st in support of Austria-Hungary. The latter following suit on August 6th. France ordered full mobilization in support of Russia on August 2nd. So, as you can see, World War I was very much just a very small conflict between two different nations that quickly escalated into a series of events that would lead up to the first war to end all wars. Now, 1917, the film itself and its story, takes place about a year before World War I really ended. And specifically, it takes place on April 6th, 1917, with aerial reconnaissance observing that the German army, which has pulled back from a sector of the Western Front in northern France, is not in retreat, but has made a strategic withdrawal to the new Hindenburg Line, where they are waiting to overwhelm the British with artillery. In the British trenches, with field telephone lines cut, two young British lance corporals, William Schofield, a veteran of the Somme, and Tom Blake, are ordered by General Aaron Moore to carry a message to Colonel Mackenzie of the 2nd Battalion of the Devonshire Regiment, calling off a scheduled attack the next morning that would jeopardize the lives of over 1,600 men, including Blake's brother, Lieutenant Joseph. Schofield and Blake crossed no man's land to reach the abandoned German trenches. In an underground barracks, they discover a tripwire set by the Germans, which is promptly triggered by a rat. The explosion almost kills Schofield, but Blake saves him, and the two escape. They arrive at an abandoned farmhouse where a German plane is shot down in a dogfight with Allied aircraft. Schofield and Blake save the burned pilot, but the pilot stabs Blake and is shot dead by Schofield. Schofield comforts Blake as he dies, promising to complete the mission and to write to Blake's mother. Taking Blake's rings and dog tag, as well as Aaron Moore's letter, he is picked up by a passing British unit. A destroyed canal bridge near Ecouste Saint-Mine prevents the British lorries from crossing, and Schofield chooses to part with them. He uses what is left of the bridge to cross alone, and comes under fire from a sniper. Exchanging shots, Schofield wounds the sniper and advances, whereupon he and the sniper shoot each other simultaneously. The sniper is killed, while Schofield is struck in the helmet and knocked out. He regains consciousness at night and finds the town in flames. He discovers a French woman hiding with an infant. She treats his wounds, and he gives her his canned food and milk from the farm. Despite her pleas, Schofield leaves after hearing the chimes of a nearby clock and realizing that time is running out. Encountering German soldiers, he strangles one to death and escapes pursuit by jumping into a river. He is swept over a waterfall before reaching the riverbank. In the forest, he finds D Company of the 2nd Devons, which is in the last wave of the attack. As the company starts to move toward the front, Schofield tries to reach Colonel Mackenzie. Realizing that the trenches are too crowded for him to make it to Mackenzie in time, Schofield goes over the top and sprints on the open battlefield parallel to the British trench line, just as the infantry begins its charge. He forces his way in to meet Mackenzie, who reads the message and reluctantly calls off the attack. Schofield then finds Joseph, who is among the first wave and is bloodied but unharmed. Schofield tells Joseph of his mission and that his brother Tom has died, passing on Tom's rings and dog tag. Joseph is deeply upset about his brother, but thanks Schofield for his efforts. Schofield then asks to write to their mother about Tom's heroics, just like Tom asked, to which Joseph agrees. Exhausted, Schofield sits under a nearby tree, looking at photographs of his wife and children. Now, that was just the recap of the exact beginnings of World War I and the plot summary of the film 1917. Tune into our next segment where I will be speaking more about the production background and history behind making 1917. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Hey, think twice before you litter. Even a small piece of trash can endanger the beautiful animals in our communities. So don't litter. Take responsibility and help the environment. Help save some animals and keep the world clean. It only takes a few seconds to find the trash can and throw away that candy wrapper. So be a role model and don't litter. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Hello everyone, we are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Today, I've taken a look back on 1917, the 2019 British war film that was directed and produced by Sam Mendes. And so far, I have looked at the overall plot summary of the film, as well as the cause, the main cause and escalation of World War I, which is when the film is set. And now I'd like to talk a little bit more about the production background and history behind making 1917. Regarding pre-production, Amblin Partners and New Republic Pictures were announced to have acquired the project in June 2018, with Sam Mendes directing and co-writing the screenplay alongside Christy Wilson-Cairns. Tom Holland was reported to be in talks for the film in September 2018, though ultimately was not involved. And in October, Roger Deakins was set to reunite with Mendes as cinematographer. George MacKay and Dean Charles Chapman entered negotiations to star the same month. Thomas Newman was hired to compose the score in March 2019. The same month, Benedict Cumberbatch, Colin Firth, Mark Strong, Richard Madden, Andrew Scott, Daniel Mays, Adrian Scarborough, Jamie Parker, Naban Rizwan, and Claire DeBerk joined the cast in supporting roles. In August 2019, Mendes stated, "It's the story of a messenger who has a message to carry, and that's all I can say. It lodged with me as a child, this story for this fragment, and obviously I've enlarged it significantly, but it has that at its core." In Time magazine in 2020, Mendes stated that the writing involved some risk-taking. "I took a calculated gamble, and I'm pleased I did because of the energy you get just from driving forward in the narrative. In a war that was fundamentally about paralysis and stasis." The ideas for a script, which Mendes wrote with Christy Wilson-Cairns, came from the story that Mendes' grandfather, Alfred Mendes, a native of Trinidad who was a messenger for the British on the Western Front, had told him. Mendes stated, "I felt an obligation to honor my grandfather. It's important to remember they were fighting for a free and unified Europe. Good to be reminded of that now." With filming, Roger Deakins was the cinematographer for the film, reuniting with Mendes for their fourth collaboration, having first worked together on Jarhead in 2005. Filming was accomplished with long takes and elaborately choreographed moving camera shots to give the effect of two continuous takes. And what is a continuous take? Well, a continuous take, or a one-shot, or oneer, is usually referred to as a full-length movie or sequence filmed in one long take by a single camera or manufactured to give the impression that it was. A long take, within filmmaking, is a shot lasting much longer than the conventional editing pace either of the film itself or of films in general. Significant camera movement and elaborate blocking are often elements in long takes, but not necessarily so. And the term long take, or one shot, or one take, or oneer, should not be confused with the term long shot, which refers to the distance between the camera and its subject and not to the temporal length of the shot itself. Fun fact, the length of a long take was originally limited to how much film the magazine of a motion picture camera could hold. But with the advent of digital video, this has considerably changed regarding the maximum length and potential of said length of a take. Although media accounts often refer to the story of 1917 as being told in only one shot, the story cuts to black 1 hour and 6 minutes into the film, when Schofield is knocked unconscious and fades in upon his regaining consciousness after night has fallen. Mendez explained, "It was to do with the fact that I wanted the movie to go from afternoon to dusk, and then from night into dawn. I wanted it to be in two movements. I wanted to take it somewhere more like a hallucination, somewhere more surreal, almost dreamlike, and horrifying as well." 1917 was the first film to be shot with the Arri Alexa Mini LF digital cinema camera. Deakins wanted to use a camera with a large format image sensor, but thought that the original Alexa LF was too large and heavy to capture the intimate shots he wanted. Arri provided him with a prototype of the Mini LF 2 months before filming was set to begin, and two more cameras a week before. His lenses were Arri Signature Primes, of which he used three focal lengths, a 40mm lens for most of the film, a wider 35mm for scenes in the tunnels and bunkers to emphasize feelings of claustrophobia, and a narrower 47mm in the river to lose some of the background. Filming began on April 1st, 2019 and continued through June 2019 in Wiltshire Hankley Common in Surrey and Govan, as well as at Shepperton Studios. Concern was raised about filming on Salisbury Plain by conservationists who felt the production could disturb potentially undiscovered remains, requesting a survey before any set construction began. Some shots required the use of as many as 500 background extras, and sections of the film were also shot near low force on the River Tees, Teesdale, in June 2019. The production staff had to install signs warning walkers in the area not to be alarmed at the artificial bodies and body parts strewn around the site. The scenes on the river were mostly shot with a drone, and the cast and crew were assisted by a local outdoor adventure provider for safety and stunts. 1917 premiered in the UK on December 4th, 2019, and was released theatrically in the United States on December 25th by Universal Pictures, and in the United Kingdom on January 10th, 2020 by Entertainment One. The film received widespread critical praise and was a box office success, grossing $384 million worldwide. Among its numerous accolades, it received 10 nominations at the 92nd Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director, and 3 wins for Best Cinematography, Best Visual Effects, and Best Sound Mixing. It was the last film to win the Academy Award for Best Sound Mixing before the category was combined with Best Sound Editing as a single award for Best Sound. The film also won Best Picture at the 77th Golden Globe Awards, 73rd BAFTA Film Awards, and PGA Awards, while Mendez won Best Director at the Golden Globes, BAFTAs, and DGA Awards. The film was also chosen by both the National Board of Review and the American Film Institute as one of the top 10 films of 2019. So that was just the overall production background and history of the 2019 British war film, 1917. Tune into our next segment, where I will be speaking more about the character arcs of 1917 and the overall themes of them. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You, with top stories at the bottom of the hour, with your host, DJ Dane Mon, on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Why do we bow? We bow because it's important to exercise our right to bow. We bow on issues that matter to us, such as healthcare, education, the economy, civil rights, and immigration. With our bows, we have the power to shape our country and our communities. Your vote matters.
Yeah!
So please, register to vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Hello everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Today, I have so far taken a look back on 1917, the 2019 British war film directed by Sam Mendes. And so far I have looked at the overall main cause of World War I, which is when the film is set, as well as the overall plot summary of 1917. I have also looked at the production background and history behind making the film as well. Now I would like to talk about the character arc. Upon the very first glance at one of the film's first trailers, I thought 1917 to be just another entry within the genre of action war films. Then, after the first viewing of the actual film, for long after its credits rolled, I thought 1917 to be an epic anti-war film. But now, just a few months before this one-year anniversary of its original release, like an itch in the back of my head that just won't go away, the film as a whole still remains ingrained within my mind. It remains ingrained within the back of my mind, not just for its extraordinary cinematography and overall startling sense of immediacy in its atmosphere and pacing, but the story and its not-so-simple message of war that it carries upon its shoulders. Action war films have permeated the world of film for decades. These films generally depict individual wars with fictional and sometimes technically non-fictional characters through the specific lens of glorifying war. The most notable and recent of these kinds of films being David Ayer's Fury, a World War II film about US tank crews fighting off waves of Nazis with over-the-top violence galore. Anti-war films aren't as old as action war films, but they have steadily gained popularity since their original conception. The most memorable and recent entry was Mel Gibson's World War II film known as Hacksaw Ridge and its biographical depictions of American pacifist combat medic Desmond Doss. And again, upon first glance or viewing of 1917, anyone could be mistaken for believing that it falls into either type of war film. But in my opinion, it doesn't just fall in line with one specific side of the coin. In fact, I believe that 1917 seeks to stand apart from either side in what I think is arguably the most neutral portrayal of war, especially through its two leading soldiers. The film follows Lance Corporals William Will Schofield and Thomas Tom Blake and their mission in delivering a message that would call off a doomed offensive attack. From the start of the story, we the audience are immediately thrown into Will's and Tom's mission right along with them, barely having any time to sit and listen to anything about themselves. Whatever backstory about the two is told through small spurts of dialogue here and there. Though essentially, we learn that Tom has a brother within the battalion that would be a part of the attack they're trying to stop. And it isn't until the very last shot of the film that we see that Will has actually had a family back home this entire time, a wife and a child. Yet, something that went virtually unnoticed by me until the 10th or 12th time watching this film was the two different perspectives of the glorification and depreciation of war that Tom and Will each embody individually. After being assigned their mission, Tom is clearly the most enthusiastic of the pair to accomplish it, especially since his brother is also one of the people that they're trying to save. Tom is also shown to embody not a purely enthusiastic, but prideful sense of duty and honor as a soldier. In one of their conversations, Will and Tom talk about the fact that Tom might have earned a Medal of Valor for saving Will's life earlier in the film. That's when Will reveals that he never lost his previous medal and instead traded it with another soldier for some wine. At this point, Tom tells Will that he shouldn't have done that, since he could have kept it for his family, and that men have died for that. That is when Will states, "It's just a bit of bloody tin. It doesn't make you special. Doesn't make any difference to anyone." Yet Tom still persists with his point that it is special, that it's not just a bit of tin. It's got a ribbon on it. The two opposing points of view of war and its merits are shown in this one scene of Will and Tom walking and talking. Tom would thoroughly enjoy receiving a medal of some kind. He would be proud to perform a dutiful and honorable feat worthy enough of one. But Will, well, he's a different man. Will's acts and answers regarding the medal shows his indifferent sense of duty and honor as a soldier. Even earlier in the film, Tom is told by another soldier to choose someone to accompany him for his upcoming mission. So, naturally, he chooses the first person around him. He chooses Will. But after narrowly avoiding the collapse of an enemy-made tunnel system, Will frequently and angrily asks Tom why he had to choose him, why he had to choose Will to help him on this mission. And of course, Tom never answers Will's question directly. Instead, the two soldier on with their mission. Even though Will clearly doesn't want to be there in the first place, he would much rather be at home with his family. He even relates this to Tom in one of their conversations of how he hated going home. He's gone back home before, and he hated it because, as he says, "When I knew I couldn't stay, when I knew I had to leave, and they might never see him again," is what he was trying to say. Will is a soldier who clearly sees more of the death, destruction, and despair that Tom obviously doesn't see from the war. Will represents the side of the coin that I think closely resembles anti-war beliefs, while Tom represents the side that closely resembles the glory of it. And what writers Sam Mendes and Christy Wilson-Cairns chooses to do for either character within the service of the story is flip their respective perspectives by the end of each of their arcs. Will starts off the film story the same way that Tom does, with the awakening from a nap just outside of the trenches. However, the line of belief and perspective is drawn after they receive their orders to send a message and stop the attack. Tom persists throughout the story with a drive of pride while showing appreciation for intrinsic beauties around him like metals and trees. This sense of near optimism that Tom displays also shows his naivete and innocence to war, all the way until the bitter and sudden end at the other end of the knife of the one enemy he tried to save. Tom's death suddenly and quickly changes his perspective upon the war. He even curses out the enemy German soldier that stabbed him before seeing and focusing upon the single stab wound. In the last moments before his death, Tom did not see the glory of war, but the ugliness of it. Tom's death doesn't just change his own perspective upon war. It changes Will's as well. Will gradually changes to that of Tom's original perspective at the start of the film. After leaving Tom's body in the care of some British troops, he rides in a convoy with other soldiers who hear of his mission and reply that he would never make it. Will simply then replies with, "Yes, I will." From that point, he pushes on through each new obstacle, from deadly enemy snipers to deadly rapids. He pushes on to the battalion with Tom's brother. He pushes on for Will, his fallen comrade who saved him and in turn was not able to return the favor. Along the way, Will is even shown to enjoy and even be entranced by some of the same intrinsic beauties that Tom's near optimism thrived off of. Will takes refuge from an abandoned and destroyed village under siege by enemy soldiers with a local French woman and a baby that she had found. Before continuing on, he gives them some milk he found and even calms the baby down with a nursery rhyme. He even allows the near stranger woman to look after his wounds. And then when he jumps into the rapids later on to escape the enemy, he falls into a river from a waterfall. And as he floats through this river, he nearly lets himself drown. But then he resurfaces and starts to take notice of a growing amount of blossom leaves fluttering and floating with him. He holds up his hand to look at them fall through his fingers, almost like a message from Tom from the afterlife. That is what pushes Will to continue on with the mission. After sobbing and listening to a hauntingly entrancing rendition of Joss Slavik's "I Am a Poor Wayfaring Stranger," he pushes through soldier after soldier within the same front lines that he is trying to save. He charges perpendicular to them amidst passing bodies and too close for comfort explosions in order to stop Colonel McKenzie, the foil to both Will and Tom's characters. Captain Smith, one of Will's fellow soldiers that aided him, remarked earlier that some men just want the fight, that some men just want the glory and ugliness that comes of war. And thankfully, with more of Captain Smith's wisdom, Will tells Colonel McKenzie of the attack in front of witnesses and stops the doomed attack before it can continue on. By the film's end, Will is not a totally changed man, but a man with a totally changed perspective on war. He has completed his mission and has now even gone to see Tom's brother and tell him of his death. Yet, instead of just telling him the news of his death and leaving, he stays and relays how much he liked Tom's stories and how much of a good man he really was. He then, instead of checking up on his wounds, walks over to a lonely tree and is visibly shown to show appreciation and contentment the fact that he even survived his mission. And he does so by resting on the tree and looking to a picture of his family and their message, "Come back to us." Tune into our next segment where I will be talking about what aspiring storytellers can learn from 1917. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouman, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Did you know that wearing a mask when outdoors or in public areas while social distancing helps shorten the duration of any pandemic? Maintaining a distance of about 6 feet from any other person helps as well. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Hello everyone, we are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouman, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Today, I have so far taken a look back on 1917 and the overall causes of World War I, which is when the film is set, and the overall plot summary as well as the production background and history of making the film. I have also just talked about the overall character arc of 1917, and now I would like to talk more about what aspiring storytellers can learn from the film. Obviously, setting matters within a story. After all, it's where the characters of any story will be interacting with each other and the world around them. Most stories within any form, film, theatrical plays, novels, etc., usually employ setting for stylistic or substantial reasons. Great examples of some of these kinds of stories are most entries within The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, Star Wars, or Star Trek-like franchises. 1917 is one of those rare films that takes full advantage of its World War I period and setting with both style and substance. Plenty of films and television series have been made about World War II or the Vietnam War, yet barely anything has been made to showcase that of World War I. I can only offer one opinionated reason for why this is the case, and it is because the causes and effects, as well as ramifications of World War II and the Vietnam War, being arguably more important than those of World War I, at least to history. There are still some World War I films that are made, but none as iconic as 1917 in its short time of release. One major reason why 1917 is one of, if not already, the most iconic World War I film of all time is because of the film's landscapes of the World War I time period. Throughout the film of 1917, director Sam Mendes and cinematographer Roger Deakins takes us through the Western Front of Northern France in the year of 1917. Specifically, the audience follows the story of soldiers near the commune of Auguste-Saint-Mine all the way up to the Hindenburg Line. And since the story is set during World War I, the filmmakers decided to show the harsh conditions that soldiers of this war had to endure. From trenches and tunnels full of booby traps and bodies, both alive and dead, to bodiless plains and fields, we even see a razed village with half-destroyed and burning buildings and the nearby rivers of bodies that decorate them. Despite the ugliness of most of these scenes, the filmmakers still showcase grandiose and often entrancing moments like the flares over Auguste and the cherry blossoms over its river. The filmmakers of 1917 purposely chose to show the intrinsic beauty and utter ugliness of war throughout the many landscapes that the story is set in. In my opinion, they have struck the best balance of both style and substance within the film. Any kind of storyteller, no matter the format, should learn from filmmakers like Sam Mendes and craft something that layers landscapes with visual splendor and supplemented story. 1917 is an incredible feat of filmmaking. No, you know what? 1917 is an astounding achievement in storytelling. I don't know off the top of my head which film or television production first came up with the idea of producing a one-shot or one-take or one-er scene, but I can name a couple of my favorite ones from recent memory. Atomic Blonde, Children of Men, Daredevil, Next Gen, and many more have produced at least one of these one-ers. They have each produced at least one one-shot scene, albeit in various lengths. But 1917 will likely go down in history for trying and succeeding in something new. So again, one-shots, one-takes, or one-ers are long, continuous shots or takes of recorded film by a single camera, or manufactured in such a way that it was. There are both early and modern examples of real one-take films, like Alfred Hitchcock's 1948 film, Rope, and Sebastian Shipper's 2015 thriller, Victoria. Arguably, the act of creating a one-shot sequence did not reach popular mainstream media until several successful hits, like the 2006 sci-fi film Children of Men or the 2015 superhero television series Daredevil. It wasn't until after the latter's release that later productions began to follow the trend of creating these one-shot type sequences. Yet for 1917, director Sam Mendes doesn't continue, but still adheres to the basic principles of creating a oneer. The productions that I've mentioned, like Victoria and Daredevil, employ the use of one-shots for moments that would feel appropriate regarding the overall pacing. They also mostly employ them out of logistical convenience, out of knowing whether or not it's even feasible to film the planned one-shot film or sequence. That's why real one-shot films or sequences like Victoria's and Daredevil's were successful. It was because they knew that with the scope they were aiming for, it was possible to craft their oneers. But again, 1917 is something new. Sure, it's not filmed all in one take, but it's crafted to make it look like it was. Multiple one-shot camera takes were choreographically filmed so that editor Lee Smith could merge them in such a way that it is near impossible to spot all the places where the filmmakers actually cut the film. Seriously, I've tried and I couldn't figure out on my own where and how a possible cut could have taken place. And sure, other films already exist where the camera never actually cuts. But 1917 is a film that appears to be a continuous oneer and actually feels like one too. The impression that the audience feels, or at least how I and most others I know have seen this film feels when watching 1917, is the full immersion that comes from the film's craftsmen and women who helped make it feel that way, who helped make it feel like I was right there in World War I. The scope of the storytelling of 1917, as well as its production, is truly something to behold. And the ingenuity behind crafting it is truly unique, truly new. Storytellers should always push themselves to try something new with each new story that they wish to tell. I mean, I've never hosted or written my own radio show before, but with each episode I've produced, I've tried to do something new, no matter how small or big, in order to help develop my skills as a storyteller, or an aspiring one, that is. That's why I encourage anyone who has a new story to tell to not be afraid to tell it, and to not be afraid to try something new. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouement, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Thank you for listening.